B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
And then you go on stage and you want to be incendiary and you want to set the place on fire and you want to be the greatest band anyone ever saw. And
that's the singer, songwriter, and brains behind Bush talking about Gavin Rossdale, my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. We talk about a lot of topics today, including raising sons, the brand new record, his thoughts about Chester Bennington and Chris Cornell.
I always liked Chester, I always liked Chris. They're really similar, really sensitive souls, and really behind all the volume of sound that they gave us.
We also talk about Bush's debut record, 16 Stone, and how not only the music was changing, but how much his life changed during that period as well. And he also tells me something that even he doesn't know what it means.
Nor have I. Just made it up. I don't know where the hell it came from. That was powered by fatigue.
Gavin Rossdale from Bush today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Back at it again, the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Thanks so much for downloading and checking out. Got another good one on tap for you today with Gavin Rossdale. Have you met him before?
I have not, no.
It was really cool. So he was doing the meet and greet. Actually, the band was doing the meet and greet. There was maybe like about 100 people. We were all lined up down this side road, down this path. And they told our group to go last because we were the radio guys. And we were just going to go right from there, right to the interview and stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we were the last ones. And so it was kind of cool. Got this killer picture with the band and whatnot. And then it's like I just found myself through, I don't know why, just walking next to Gavin, walking back in. There was like no one around us for like 20 feet. And it's just me and him. And I'm like, hey, man, like I said in the interview a couple months ago, I'd never met him before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in this business for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like I played 16 Stone when it was brand new, you know.
Yeah. 16 Stone, man, that was one of my big albums growing up, growing up in the 90s. So
yeah.
That was one of my big albums.
No, it was killer. So, I can remember just song after song after song became hit after hit after mm-hmm. hit. And as a matter of fact, I talk about that in the interview coming up here where, like, you know, in 1994, what was the Gavin like then to 1995 Gavin? Because in one yeah. year, man, his life changed a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
And so
it's kind of like we were talking on the last episode about the Kurt Cobain, the royalty check.
Yeah.
That they found it was like $26. That was 6 months before Nevermind came out.
Yeah.
Like, imagine how his life was changing from there to, you know what I mean?
I think the Kurt Cobain before Nevermind came out would have jumped at the chance to sign that $26
absolutely.
Check.
Absolutely. Yeah, but he lost it.
All right. So anyways, so Gavin and I are just walking, and it's like kind of, like, it's a cool, like, summertime night, supposedly, here in Detroit. And he says to me, says something on the lines of, man, it's kind of cool here. I go, yeah, dude. I go, summer is done. And he kind of chuckles. He goes, really? I go, this is it, man. It's over with. You know? And so, anyways, he was really nice. We walked in, and as we're walking down this hallway and stuff, there's this little fur ball of a dog. Mm-hmm. And Gavin does this, like with
yeah,
his mouth.
Sure,
and the
yeah.
dog just starts following him. I guess it's his dog. He takes him on a tour and stuff.
I hope it's his dog.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's funny because, yeah, when you're the band, you can bring whatever you want into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially when you're Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so we go into this room. And it was this small little room, and it's got a sink and a bathroom and a shower and the whole thing, couch like they usually have. And of course, his road case is all open up with, you know, clothes and different things. And so his tour manager, his assistant or something, says to me, she goes, hey, would you guys like some water? And normally it's like, you know, just to be polite. Nah, not really. But I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, why not? I'll take a water.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so she walks out of the room, and Gavin says, would you guys like an adult beverage? And he was drinking that, what's that, Sapporo, that the Mexican beer? And so anyways,
okay,
I saw him drinking it earlier. I'm like, I'm not huge on drinking, you know, beer and stuff. I love beer, but it's like, man, I'd like to get a taste of that. And I go, dude, I'd love an adult beverage.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So anyways, he went out and he got the girl, and she brought back a couple beers. So that's where the interview starts today. It's Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. Oh,
the drunk edition.
That's right.
Drunk with Gavin.
Hey, coming up, we've got Tool News. A band says that one of their biggest records was actually inspired by strippers, which is great.
Yeah.
And we're going to
saved by strippers.
Saved. Okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to celebrate the 40th anniversary of a piece of musical machinery that has gone the way of the dodo bird as well. So,
yeah.
And in the meantime, Gavin Rossdale today on the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown podcast. Hey, Gavin, first of all, thanks for the beer, man.
You got it.
I think this might be the first time that we were offered an alcoholic beverage talking to somebody. So the girl comes in. She's
trying
like,
to grease you up.
Yeah. She's like, you guys want water? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll have one. He goes, you can have an adult beverage if you want. So that's pretty cool. So we appreciate that. So
you know, we're adults here.
Yeah, that's right. So how's things going on this tour? It looks pretty good, eh?
It's unbelievable. I mean, the whole thing is blowing my mind. I feel somehow like I'm getting a bit wiped, but there's so many travel things where we leave. I don't want to complain, but I mean, right. there's that thing, all that broken sleep and all that travel, but I feel great on the stage, and the shows are wonderful, so I'm having a good time. And Detroit, you know, good for us to play here. I love
yeah.
this. It's like incredible crowds. It's going to lift you up. Doesn't matter if you're asleep. You're going to be, you'll be plugged in once you've been in front of a Detroit crowd, if you get it right.
Yeah, and you'll get it right tonight. Now, you're closing the show tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys have been switching on and off, and which one do you like better?
Well, you know, they both work. I actually like the middle slot because you start in the dusk, and then you finish, and then the night's not like, you know, you're like 9:30, and you're done.
Yeah.
But tonight, we go on at 9:40, and it's all good. I mean, I just take it as it comes. You know, we're going to Canada next week, and I'm playing slots all over the place, so... that was someone's drawers being checked. I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, you just play whatever you play and just try and do a great show. That's
yeah.
it.
No, yeah, we were talking about this before. It's like, I have to wonder, it's like, if I was in a band, I'd want to play Canada, like, in the middle of July or something. You know, it's like some of these bands, they go through Canada in the wintertime.
We went there, and we began there in January, and it was, I remember, it was minus 25.
Wow.
Going from the club, from the bus to the club. And that was where it was really became apparent, like, you can have a career, but if you really want a career with a capital C, you fill in, you're doing all the things that no one else is going to do, like playing Canada in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, you do all those things that separate you from the herd, you know?
Well, there is a little bit of a captive audience thing, I guess, in Canada or in Detroit during the wintertime, too, because people like to do things inside, and they have to come inside.
Right. Well, we've had some insane shows in Detroit, so I was looking forward to the show a lot.
So you talk about your career, of course. When I talked to you a couple months ago, it was funny because you said, you know, when this record came out, you were painting houses or something, right? You were a painter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
here you are in your career all these years later, man.
Yeah.
Do you ever look back and think to yourself, I've done it?
No, it doesn't really work like that. You know what I mean? You know, we just go to work every day and we do what we believe in and what we love, and just it feels the opposite. It almost feels like I've been doing it for so long that I'm in this dance competition that I don't want to get tapped on the shoulder. You know, I just want to keep my rumba going.
That's another one I haven't heard before either.
Nor have I. I just made it up. I don't know where the hell they came from. That was powered by fatigue.
Is that how you write songs? Just like that? Just spit out stuff like that?
Of course.
That is so funny. So the new record is going to be dropping when?
Well, it was going to be... I got in a lot of trouble for saying November the 1st.
Okay.
I can't believe
you talked about the title of it, to be honest with you, because a lot of bands won't even tell us the title half the time.
Well, the thing is, I think what I believe about things like titles and the mind plays tricks on you is that you want to seep into people's subconscious.
Okay.
It's like subliminal, you know? It's not like a baby or something where people get annoyed that it takes so long once they've heard about it. Like, show us the baby. It's like it just seeps into people's imaginations. So, but I probably got in trouble for that as well, but I wasn't paying attention to that bit. I paid attention to the bit about the date. And now it's been moved to the beginning of the year, I think March or April, which really makes no difference. It's a couple of months. And as long as we keep the momentum, and if there's a new song, I hope there's a new song coming to radio, if Bullet Hole starts to slide down the pole, I hope there's another one coming. You know?
Yeah. So this tour, I mean, you'll just keep on going then. Like through next year, you'll be back here again next year, you think, huh?
Yeah, I'm so confused at how it never ends. It just never seems to end. I just get time to see my children, go home, hang with my kids, and then come back out. So we finish. This is the last show in America of the summer.
Yeah.
And as we're talking about on the way in. And then I come back. Well, but then I restart 10th of August, October. Who am I? What's my name? What band am I in? Who do I like?
There
What's my favorite food? Am I a vegan? I don't know.
You are, though, aren't you?
I heard the phrase the other day, a dirty vegan.
Oh, dirty, okay.
I like that, which was every now and again you have a bit of a steak. You know, oopsie. You know, I need it. I'm sorry. But so, no, I'm not anything. I'm a lover of all food and organic products and no animals suffering unnecessarily. So,
gotcha.
But that goes till October 28th or something, this tour. But then we kick off again next year with Australia.
Okay.
With Live and STP.
Now, last time you toured with STP, right?
Yeah.
The Cult.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? How was that experience?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've known the DeLeo brothers for a long time, but I never got the chance to really spend that amount of time with them. And they're a beautiful band, and beautiful songs, and beautiful people, beautiful musicianship. And it was. I loved touring with them. And then originally it was going to be the Cult going to Australia, and then I think they didn't. They did it at last minute. Ian pulled out, and so the guys at Live Nation were like, what's been working this summer?
Yeah.
So they got live. So it's cool, all three of us doing that. So I'm happy to do with the tour with any of those bands. I like them all, and they're good people, including the Cult. And you know, I just say, you know, it's all good being friends, and then you go on stage and you want to be incendiary and you want to set the place on fire and you want to be the greatest band anyone ever saw, and your ego wants the show to be great, and you come off stage and you're just like, you know, mellow and easy and just get on with life, you know?
How many nights do you come off the stage thinking that was it? Like, that was the great show?
I've lost a bit of focus, to be honest, because it feels like I've done so many shows recently that I just get through each song to kind of do the most I can do with each song. And when I come off stage, it's like, did I do the most I can? That's my only perspective. Not the effect of it. Often it's a bit like being so out on a limb that you have to, in a way, lose yourself, leave yourself behind, and like dive into this moment on stage. And you don't know if you're being an idiot or if you're being really entertaining. It's a really thick line between
right.
the two. So I don't know. I just think that it's essential to go for it, and just like, I've said this 1,000 times, so I apologize 1,001. But it's every show has to be like the last show you ever do, because it might be.
Yeah.
And I want to leave people just gobsmacked. You know, it's not like you don't want to save it for, you know, Detroit and give up on Ohio.
Right.
You know, it's a terrible thing. You want to just like make it so that it's just, you know, you're as good as your last show, and I want to be great every day. So.
Yeah, you mentioned the leaving it all behind and stuff, and we'll get to the last shows here in a second. But so you got three boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where does like I was talking about this with my friends today from Theory of a Dead Man, and it's like, I have kids too, you know, their kids are teenage kids and whatnot. So where does like the father Gavin and like the rock star Gavin begin? Is there like a line, or is it just when you hop on tour that's just what you do?
When I'm in their presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when I'm with them, then it's like, it would be ridiculous doing the school run as a rock singer, you know? So I tend to like, you know, keep it on the DL when I'm driving them to school. But,
does it ever feel strange, like when you're driving your kids to school, you know, you're an international rock star, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and I'm not trying to like, you know, say that you're an egomaniac or nothing like that, but like sometimes I find it weird that I'm talking to you here right now, and some of my kids' fathers are at home right now getting ready to go to their 40, you know, hour job, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. It's such a beautiful job, and to be in this band and to have this life, and then it's really equally, probably if not more, a beautiful job to be a father. You know, you're a father, and it's just that you see the beauty and the simplicity of just seeing both my boys get out of the car, walking to school with their packed lunches and their bag. It just melts your heart. So
yeah,
that kind of, you just, I don't know, you take that, and then when I walk out on stage tonight and I want to try and make Detroit lose their mind, feels incredible too. I mean, I guess I'm just very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, my son's 16, and he stresses me out like you can't believe. So I don't know how you
do it.
Oh, yeah.
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 He's a tester.
Yeah, we could talk about that for a long time. But you said you were talking about...
Sounds spirited. I think spirited is good. I think the more trouble they are, the kind of, once you can corral them and help them, the more interesting they're going to be in later life, you know?
I hope you're right. I'm going to remember that.
Please do.
So.
He's got fireworks in him.
That's right.
It's probably your fault.
It probably is. Yeah, you're right. Hey, speaking of last shows, you know, I saw Soundgarden's last show here. And, of course, you didn't know it was their last show. And you were talking about that. And then, you know, you sang at the Chester Bennington thing, didn't you?
So. And we were playing with Soundgarden on that run. We were doing a lot of all the festivals they were doing. So they would do kind of side shows, effectively. And then... So all the way up to the very last show, I saw them in Memphis. I didn't see them in Memphis. There was a confusion, and my bus left, and I was really annoyed because I really wanted to see them. And I didn't, but I thought, well, no problem, I'll see them in Oklahoma. And then we go there, or I think it was Oklahoma. I can't remember where it was now. I can't remember anything now. I think my name's Gavin. And then, then the tragedy occurred, and so... Yes, Soundgarden, you know, incredible band.
And how well do you know Chester?
I mean, you know, with these guys, it was with Chester and with Chris, I knew them enough to spend time talking to them, but I mean, I never really hung out with them socially outside of the scene, so to speak. But we just professional acquaintances, and I certainly respected them. I hope they respected me, and we just got along fine. And I always liked Chester, I always liked Chris. They're really similar, really sensitive souls, and really behind all the volume of sound that they gave us, two really decent, good human beings, as far as I could tell.
All right, a couple more things here, and we'll let you get on with your life. So the record turns 25, 16 stone, which was named after the size of a prostitute, which seems kind of bizarre, but is that right?
Apparently. Allegedly.
A woman of the night. I was listening to a thing today with the guys from Skid Row. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of their record.
Right.
That came out 5 years before 16 stone. And the world and the music had changed so much in that 5 years.
Right.
And I can't think of another time it's done that, like since I've been in this business for 30 years.
Right.
Talk about when your record came out and how music just took like this drastic turn.
Well, I think that there was a period where the 80s, that hair metal and the hair rock, whatever, it's a terrible name, sorry, it's not a good name, description of it, but that's what it was called, right? And they ruled rock. It ruled rock. And, you know, from, you know, Motley Crue and Poison, Def Leppard, all of those. So they were part of that kind of scene, you know. And Guns N' Roses were the kings of that scene. And they're an amazing band. I mean, that Appetite for Destruction is one of the greatest rock records of all time. And then I think with the advent of what was called at the time grunge music was... people from a more post-punk sensibility coming in and playing stuff that was somewhat of a rock antidote to that sort of glamour rock, you know? And that's all. It was just what I found inspiring about that whole scene was that you could... you know, I always thought that Aerosmith meant that I couldn't be in a rock band because Steven Tyler has such a crazy voice that it was a whole different thing. And I was like, oh, I felt excluded from that. And it was just a weird thing with that seismic shift in music. It just felt like a different scene was coming up, and we were inspired by that, and we were kind of lonely mavericks doing it in London and with no commercial potential whatsoever, because that was the height of Britpop. It just was like a sound that I liked and a sound I was into. And it was ironic that the band, that was the third band I was in, in my life, and it was the least commercially intentional band. You know, the other two bands, it was like, okay, how can you, you know, make a song a hit? Okay, you know, how can you get someone's attention? How can you get a record deal? That was a lot of the philosophy behind those bands, and I was just learning and finding my way in music, and not very good at either guitar or singing or songwriting or anything. But I did get signed really early on in my first band to Epic. So there was some potential there. And, then it just, that failed, and the next band failed, and everyone left, and there was an amazing liberation for me, just to kind of go and do, well, you know what, you're painting, but that's cool, look at Fugazi, you know, all these guys, they're famous for having day jobs and keeping it real and no merch and low ticket prices. And okay, so you don't become, you know, you're not going to be in a sort of a boy band, you're not going to be successful or rich or happy, but you can just do something that feels out on a limb. And then I saw Jane's Addiction, and I saw Soul Asylum, and I was in love with the shoegazer, you know, My Bloody Valentine, but I like the performance of the American bands a lot, you know, and so that just inspired me, and then I kind of put that all into a melting pot, and out came 16 Stone.
So back in the day, it's like there wasn't like the internet where you could hear something, you know, mm-hmm. So you had to go out and discover that stuff physically, eh?
Yeah, Rough Trade Records, used to go there a lot, and I was friendly with them in there, and anything that was happening, all the American scene, all the hardcore scene, the, you know, I was into Public Image, and then 4AD, which is a record label in England, they had a, you know, they had the Pixies, and I just loved that sound, you know, that sound was like, it blew me away, and this was weird, because we talk about that, and then the other night, I'm celebrating with Steve Albini, celebrating his 10th wedding anniversary, you know, 22 years after working with him and knowing him, being good friends with him ever since. So it's a beautiful journey we're on.
Yeah. And so when the record comes out at the end of 1994, mm-hmm. what is your life like at the end of 1995? It must have been a seismic shift.
Exploding suitcase and a wide open, shocked face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's killer. Well, congratulations on the 25th anniversary. I got one final thing here for you. Of course, being a painter and somebody that likes, you know, art and stuff, give me some record covers that you think are some of your favorites.
Well, it's ironic you say that because 4AD, which has Vaughan Williams, was the artistic director, the art director. He, all those covers, all the Surfer Rosa is probably my favorite cover of all time. And that was the Pixies, and inside you had the Flamenco Girl. And on Razorblade Suitcase, not only did I get to work with Steve Albini, I got to get Vaughn to do the artwork for that. So anything done by 4AD, I truly love. It just goes all the iconic covers, really, isn't it? You know, because they just associate those records. That's the thing I miss about vinyl. You know, I don't want to bore everyone to sleep about the sound. I just mean the artwork was so big. And I'd always go straight to the thanks, because it'd always be fun to listen to someone's new record, listen to their lyrics, read them, and then see who was in their gang and who was popular. Oh, man, you know, I wish I was that person, you know. I do that always, and I still do, but now people don't do any of that. And so now it's just singles and no artwork, and it's a shame. It's sad.
I just picked up the brand new Spread Eagle record, and they thanked me. See? It's one of the things.
There you go.
Yeah,
there
see,
you go.
One of the things you look forward to seeing. So.
Exactly. It feels so nice when you get thanked.
It is because...
Oh, man, when I did my first thanks for people, I got in terrible trouble from my first girlfriend. I didn't, you know, Miss Thurlow, and she was really annoyed that I didn't put Lindsay. So I'm sorry, Lindsay. Lindsay Thurlow, you're the best.
All right, Gavin. Well, listen, we'll let you go here, man. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to talk to you here in person. And good luck, and we can't wait for the new record, The Mind Plays Tricks on You. Man, it's a good thing you said that. I mean, I thought you were going to say the name of the title, and maybe Tool would steal it from you or something. Well, good luck next year.
Well, nothing from Tool for the next 15 years, because we just had a record, so we're okay there. The coast is clear.
Thanks, man.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
There he is, Gavin Rosdell, today in the Talkin' Rock with a Meltdown podcast. And, man, just a pretty good guy. I posted some pictures on my Instagram at Meltdown WRIF, and Gavin was actually sitting up on the sink with his feet on the top of this couch that was sitting next to us.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting on the couch, and just a really super chill conversation. Really nice guy. I could talk to him about anything, and it's a cool conversation. So I hope that
and you can feel a difference between a face-to-face and a phone interview.
Oh, there's no question.
You know.
especially when I was talking to him earlier, because when I talked to him a couple months ago, the connection wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. Not the social connection. Yeah, yeah. That was perfect.
I'm sure.
But the the line they were on, it's always those third way calls, which I bitch about all the time. But yeah, it was really cool. So the guys from Live, of course, opened up the show, Our Lady Peace as well. And I wanted to bump into Ed Kowalczyk because I never met him before either. And I interviewed him a couple months ago.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
He was awesome. Like the nicest guy. And I just wanted to say hi to him. And sometimes, you know, when you meet people like that, it just makes it all worthwhile. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I get it. You're a rock star and whatever. But if you're going to be a dick, then I don't really want to talk to you. But,
I agree with that.
You know, but 100%. He was super nice. Like I talked about Brad Gillis last time. Yeah. You know, met him for 15 yeah. seconds and super nice guys.
Yeah.
One day I'll get him on the pod. In the meantime, speaking of guys I don't really want on the podcast.
Yeah. And yet every episode keeps showing up.
Al Beck is here with your rock news today. We got a 40th anniversary of a piece of musical instrumentation that may have gone the way of the dodo bird, like we were talking about before the interview. And some more stuff. We'll start with the dethroning of Taylor Swift.
That's right, man.
You gotta like that.
So Fear Inoculum is finally out, the new album from Tool, and debuts at number one on the Billboard charts after moving 270,000 units.
Wow.
Yeah, this is actually their third album to go number one. The other two to go number one. The other two, of course, were 10,000 Days and Lateralists as well. It was a big numbers, but yeah, much to the chagrin of fans of Taylor Swift, who were really upset about the whole thing.
The Swifties will never be the same.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
The yeah, I guess so.
The Swifters.
I think a few of them even had never even heard of Tool, so they thought this new band came and booted Taylor off the top. But I got to tell you, man, you got a band that hasn't put an album out in 13 years or whatever it was, or 14 years, whatever it was. Man, like, they're going to kill it. Like,
yeah.
That's bad luck for Taylor Swift, but, you know, she had a week.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, like we were just talking about Gavin, it's like, you know, he says he's safe because they put their record out. You know, he doesn't have to worry about the name being stolen by them anyway. So.
Right.
But yeah, the Tool record, you know, it's sweet. My problem is, like I said before, the physical copy is missing two songs on it. So
yeah,
but there is a little bit of that, you know, that spaciness going on, and there's like that 4-minute guitar solo in Tempest, which is pretty sweet. But yeah, it's a lot of music.
Yeah, one of the Swifties who complained about the Tool album, I thought this was funny, on Twitter or something. OMG, the length of each song makes me shook.
Makes me shook.
I don't even know. Can't handle a 10-minute song, I guess.
Yeah, well, why would they?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, listen, you know, I could sit here and go off on a rant about pop garbage all day long.
Sure.
And people that don't write their own songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like in you know, hired musicians and this and the other thing, but why bother? Anyways, Def Leppard, you know, Phil Collins, another guy, really nice guy, mm-hmm. who I've never actually met before,
yeah.
but I've interviewed him a few times. But so he talks about Hysteria, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so we just talked about albums that did well out of the gate, like, you know, Tool there with Fear Inoculum. This one, believe it or not, Hysteria is definitely probably Def Leppard's biggest album, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
It didn't start that way
right.
at all. They said it tanked when it came out because they looked at the amount of money they spent on it, and it didn't make hardly anything back, and they're sitting there playing to half-empty arenas going like, man, we really screwed the pooch on this one. And they credit strippers in Florida requesting Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Well, there you
because
go.
They were performing to it in the strip clubs, and then it started to, like, other listeners of radio stations started requesting the song more, and it sort of snowballed from there, and this album that started off as a massive failure became the band's biggest album, and they credit that success to strippers.
You know, yeah, for sure, and it's like, that was a little bit before my time on the radio and whatnot, but I remember, you know, you couldn't turn the radio on. Back in the, you know, the mid to late 80s right there, not hear a Def Leppard song. And that record is monstrous. I mean, it's got five or six, like, number one songs on it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Pour Some Sugar on Me, please.
Yeah.
I mean, stripper anthem all day long.
Absolutely. So, and I don't know if you knew this or not, but it was the last song that they wrote for the album as well.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's kind of like how Cherry Pie for Warrant. Like, that one, they remember they had the whole album done, and the record label's like, we need a single. And they're like, well, the album's done. Like, we need a hit single that is catchy. And so they threw together Cherry Pie, did it all in one take, and just did it to please the studio. And of course, it's the song they're known for.
Well, I laugh because I'll never forget Janie Lane somewhere. He's like, yeah, for the rest of my life, I'll be known as the Cherry Pie guy. Yeah. I'll be judging Cherry Pie contests.
And, I saw him talk about that one time in like a VH1 I Love the 80s or something. He looked like he was about to cry.
Yeah.
He's like, next thing I know, I'm judging cherry pie eating contests. Poor dude.
He walked into a bar one night back in the mid 90s. I was in Buffalo and the band Fishbone was playing in this bar outside. So it's this club that held like, I don't know, between 1,000 and 1,500. So a pretty good sized club, right? And so in the back, they had these sand pits where they played volleyball.
Yeah.
Well, they'd put up stages in the summertime. And what happened was the Fishbone was playing outside. And so there's tons of people outside standing in the sand, watching the band, whatever. And who walks in? The guys from Warrant walk into this now with the bar, which is a smattering of people because there was really nothing going on inside the bar. And I remember somewhere along the line, they started playing foosball and they were really getting into it. Next thing you know, their shirts are coming off and they're playing foosball in this bar.
But oh, my God, Warrant's naked.
But they're Warrant. So it's like 1991 or 1992. And their time was still pretty, they were still pretty hot at the time. And maybe even 91, like at the very beginning or something like that. Anyway, so then we ended up going to the Buffalo Music Awards. And I ended up showing up there and catching up with them again there. And it was like the only time I was ever around those guys. But you could tell those guys were having fun and loving their life that they made being rock stars.
Yeah.
And so, and Fishbone was outside and had no idea who Warrant was, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
And could care less. You know what Fishbone is?
I've heard of.
It's like this nine-piece, like, ska band. You know, it's like totally the opposite of Cherry Pie.
Yeah, I'm not really super familiar with them, but I have heard of them.
Yeah. So, why are we talking about Warrant? Slayer, keep going.
How about a possible tour, maybe teased by Billy Joe Armstrong? This one's a weird one, Melton. Okay. I really, seriously, no follow-up questions because I don't have a lot on this one. It's a very strange story. But this all stemmed from a comment made by Billy Joe Armstrong on the Instagram account of Rainn Wilson, which, you know, most people know him as the actor who played Dwight Schrute on The Office.
Okay.
I'm not even sure exactly what the original post was from Rainn Wilson, but Billy Joe Armstrong tagged Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy and also Rivers Cuomo from Weezer just with simply Hella Mega. And so that got people looking into this. What is this Hella Mega? And they come to this conclusion that it maybe is a tour. And there is fans stumble upon a website, which is HellaMegaTour.com. And if you go to that, it is password protected. But in the background, it's a picture of Dwight Schrute, just kind of giving the shh.
That's right. With Phyllis in the background turning around. Yeah. So
what exactly is it? No one really knows, but there's also been some Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts set up for Hella Mega as well. So
that's pretty interesting.
Possible tour for Green Day, Fall Out Boy, and Weezer.
Yeah, I think the little social media thing here is more interesting than the tour itself. I don't know. I'm not a huge, I'm not big into Weezer, and it's like, I don't know, I'm riding around my motorcycle on vacation a few weeks ago. I'm hearing that Africa song, and I'm like, I don't know, man.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, moving on.
Yeah.
Finally, is that it? Or we got one more?
We got our final story.
Okay, final story. So we were teasing this earlier. So what turns 40 years old? Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. We've had a resurgence of vinyl, which I think is super cool. You know, you're a big vinyl collector yourself. I don't know if this one's going to take off. Sony is celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Walkman by re-releasing it. You want to dust off some cassettes there, Meltdown?
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't?
No, the cassette thing doesn't do it for me.
Well, this one is an upgraded version of the original 1979 model. It's going to be featuring, none of this is going to make any sense to anyone, but it's an S-Master AHX digital amplifier to deliver high-resolution audio, up to 26 hours of battery life, and a USB port for connections.
26 hours of battery life. See, that was always the big thing, man. As a kid, I went through batteries all the time because, like, you had the boom boxes, you had those things, you know, and the batteries would just get sucked dry on them.
Yeah. So. By the time I came around, we had handheld video games and stuff that were just burning through the batteries, too.
Yeah. I remember, hiding in my closet when my parents told me to go to bed, and I'd play that football game.
Yeah,
remember?
Absolutely. I had one of those, too.
Oh, man. I was up all night playing those stupid things.
Yeah.
But, 40th anniversary of Walkman, huh?
That's still pretty cool, though, because that revolutionized taking your music with you. So we're kind of, we kind of make jokes about the technology and, you know, we're not going to go buy a bunch of cassette tapes, but it's kind of a cool thing to celebrate that 40th anniversary of such a, you know, groundbreaking piece of technology.
Yeah, I have so many like cassette tapes at my house of me on the radio from like back in the day that I'd like to actually listen to one day again.
Well, hey, you can pick up the NWA 100 TPS model Sony Walkman.
You know, it's funny because like here in the radio station, there is not a cassette player anywhere. Like back in the day, that was kind of commonplace.
Yeah.
You know, because you'd listen to your shows or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
When you turn the microphone on, the cassette player start rolling. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had like air checks and whatnot. Yeah. So anyhow, is that it?
That's it. That's all I got.
All right. There you go. A little special Monday edition of Talking Rock with Meltdown. Give your socials.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. At Meltdown WRIF. Hey, listen, if you've made it this far, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps to grow the podcast. I see some of you guys have been doing that. I've got some really good stuff coming up here for you in the future. As a matter of fact, I've got two guys from a very famous Christmas band that's going to be touring again this year coming up.
All right.
Tell them.
Okay, I won't.
Keep it a secret.
I already forgot.
And also a duo of guys who have been on the podcast before. And I'll tell you what, when they're on, man, we get some really big numbers. So looking forward to talking to those guys coming up as well. Like I said, 5-star ratings are always appreciated. You can share with your friends. And thank you, as always, for listening. And subscribe if you get a chance as well. This is Talkin' Rock. We'll do it again next time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.